Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Tony, we got guests. Let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Hour 2 of the program. The top of the hour is being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. They're taking on San Diego. Game 6 is going to be back in Rosemont on Monday. You should buy tickets at Allstate Arena. Tickets are only $15. For playoff and ticket information, visit chicagowolves.com. I'm really excited about this upcoming segment. Connor left his Twitter open, so Tony Andracki might be tweeting from it. Evan's like live tweeting what's going on here with the video. You're more than welcome to, please.
No, that's the plan.
Because we got cameras on you guys. I don't know if you noticed.
Right, I figured. That's why I didn't want to use the bathroom earlier.
Yes, please don't do that, especially here in studio. Watch 670thescore.com if you would like to see the happenings inside the studio. We've got guests that, if they were joining me on the phone, they would be joining me on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, and then I would tell you that Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. But they are here in studio with me. Sahadev Sharma running just a tad bit late, but it looks we found him? Good. Well, he'll be in here momentarily. He'll join the other two baseball writers that we have here in the house. Evan Altman from Cubs Insider does a terrific job and is a fantastic follow on Twitter. If you want to follow him, what's the D stand for?
David.
David
Evan Altman.
So D. Evan Altman, if you want to follow him on Twitter. And Tony Andracki from NBC Sports Chicago is here as well. I love Tony. He was we had an episode of House of L with Tony. He's fantastic. And when Sahadev is here, we will talk with all three of them about the Cubs team of 2019. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in before the game today.
Hey, no problem. Happy to come up and spend a little time up here. And, you know, I'm glad you brought some of my fans in as well. This is really nice of you to allow Tony to come up, and I appreciate that a lot, having a little support here.
Yeah, I'm honored to be on Evan's Periscope as he goes through this whole thing.
What I would have done, I would have gone with, yes, you know, I grew up reading your stuff. I would have gone with the old card. Like, that would have been my bar back to Evan on that, him making fun of you. Well, gentlemen, I want to talk about where things started with this Cubs team. And don't mind me, I'm going to stand up. You don't have to. It's not like the president. But I wanted to talk about the way this season started and people's reaction to it. And Evan, I'm going to start with you. Why do you think that the reaction that we saw on our Twitter timelines here on The Score was so visceral at the beginning when the Cubs started 1-6? A little different than most teams starting 1-6.
Yeah, I mean, if you looked at the end of last season, right, disappointing end, Theo gets up there in his press conference, says, you know, the offense broke somewhere along the lines. We're gonna turn up the intensity. We're gonna get that edge. We're gonna go after it. And it's about performance over production over talent. And there's all these buzzwords and all these things, and you hear all the, and then all of a sudden after the first win, they just kind of fell on their face, right? Dropped six in a row. So it didn't have. They had hyped up this feel, and that didn't show itself right away. And in fact, it kind of looked as if they had all of a sudden regressed and were that team that Pecota said was only going to win 79 games. And everybody's like, oh, my God, you know, the sky is falling a week in. But to top it off, the Brewers were playing so well. And Yelich is on fire, and they're five games back a week and a half into the season. So, what do we do? And that's about it. And then, obviously, it's changed since then, but – again, I think it's just the expectations that were set right at the end of that 2018 season really fell into this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's even the expectations they set before game one. Theo was there in Texas saying October begins in March and April for us. And that's what they were saying. I mean, it was every game has to matter. This urgency, everything they talked about. And then, yeah, they get off to a 1-6 start, a 2-7 start. You know, before they even come home, they have CJ Edwards down to the minor leagues. Mike Montgomery is hitting the IL. It was just a disaster scenario for that first 9-game road trip.
So what happened? How did this flip around so quickly? And why are we seeing some of the incredible performances. Like Chris Bryant's May has been ridiculous. And I would say the last 30 games of him has been what you come to expect. So Tony, how did this happen?
I mean, for Chris Bryant, I honestly think he was just putting too much pressure on himself in April, especially. But he was really good down there in Texas. He was going the other way. But I think he was just trying to do too much. So for him, he was in his head too much, and he finally got back to his natural abilities, which is something we're seeing. I mean, scoring from second base on a ground out is Javi-esque, but he's doing everything. He's playing defense. He's drawing a ton of walks. That's what he did to help that ninth inning comeback. But for everybody, I think they just put so much pressure on themselves overall. It was kind of the same way that Chris did. And they just did too much. They tried to do too much. And they didn't really settle in until they finally got home. They finally got back to Chicago. First time they were at Wrigley since losing to the Brewers, the Rockies in the wild card game. They just had to actually get there and settle in. And that first 9-game road trip, I mean, every single team is going to go 2-7 at some point during the year. And I know they said this a lot, but I actually believe them. It was just a bad timing that it started this first road trip.
And here's Sahadev. He is going to join us here in a minute. We'll get him situated, get the headphones on and all that good stuff. So, Evan, for you, what do you think has been the biggest reason why things turned around for this Cubs squad?
I mean, kind of following on what Tony said, you know, when they got started like that, you get on a skid, you're away from home, and not just being away from Wrigley, but, you know, they're coming right out of spring training. So they've all been away from their actual homes for so long, and that pressure did kind of build up a little bit. They just didn't have that time, I think, to breathe, to kind of settle in. And once you saw those guys start clicking, you know, we saw Anthony Rizzo had a slow start. Chris Bryant had a slow start. When you're talking about your 2 and 3 hitters not getting off and really doing anything, that's going to cause some problems. And you know, John Lester said it early. Some guys are just kicking themselves in the butt. And what that takes sometimes is maybe something's got to break your right way. You know, maybe you got to get a little lucky one time here or there. And they got a few good starts. They started putting some hits together. All of a sudden, the pressure starts to fall off a little bit. You get in front of the home crowd. You sleep in your own bed, that sort of thing. And then once that starts rolling, that momentum goes in the opposite direction. That's what we're kind of seeing from them. They started to hit the ball. They started to win some of those games they were supposed to win. And again, that momentum just carries the right way.
You brought up John Lester. And so, Sahadev, this is a good time to kind of help you, have you jump in here. When the Lester contract gets signed, there are a lot of people going, well, you know, the back end of that thing is going to be a disaster, that you're paying for the John Lester right now, not the John Lester beyond. How has he continued to be, and so far, off to statistically, one of the best starts he's ever had in his career?
Well, I mean, when it was signed, it was also, Theo was very adamant that, you know, we're confident, you know, obviously you're going to get the best value early on, but he was very confident that he's the type of pitcher that will age well, and he compared him to Andy Pettit, type of guy that, you know, maybe not is going to constantly get swing and miss or be a sub-3 ERA in the latter half of the contract, but that he's still going to be usable. And that's what all of us have been saying for the past year or so, that, oh, John Lester is on the downside of his career. How is he doing it now? How is he this good? I mean, he's that type of person. He's that type of player.
Has he changed at all? Is it from what you guys have talked to him about, is there anything different about him as a pitcher now?
I think one of the main things, actually, is I just believe he keeps continuing to get mentally stronger. His stuff has backed off. He's lost a couple of ticks on velocity, but he's so mentally strong that when something goes wrong now, he doesn't lose it. And not that he ever really did before, but he just continues to rise above adversity. So when he's in a jam, he just pitches through it way better than, you know, other guys who kind of fold in tough moments.
He puts a lot of work into it too. I mean, he's constantly working. He's constantly, as much as he talks about, he doesn't care about the numbers. He doesn't think about that stuff. It's not his job to think about that stuff. It's Tommy Hotovy and Mike Borzello and Brad Mills' job to think about that stuff. And the way they bring it to him and tell him what he needs to work on is not a bunch of numbers. They talk to him the way they know him so well that they talk to him the way he needs to be talked to and give him the information in whatever format that works best for him, whether it's him, Kyle Hendricks, Jose Quintana. They communicate with these guys individually to make sure that they can maximize all the information that they have. And I think that's part of it. He's using his two-seamer more a lot. He's using his changeup more. He's just a better pitcher than he was last year even. It looks more like the guy at the end of last year, I'd say. But he's missing bats. He's not walking anyone. I mean, that's really the big key for him. And he always said that. He said that Remember that first half last year? It was a lot of smoke and mirrors, right? The peripherals were not good, but the results were great, and he made the All-Star team. But every single question that he got was, he's like, I don't care if I strike people out. What I'm upset about is the walks. That's what's going to hurt me if I continue to do that. And it eventually did. The second half, he started off terribly because he continued to walk people. He stopped that. He's not doing it at all right now. And that's why he's such a good pitcher. His cutter is exactly where he wants it to be. It's getting the type of movement and the type of soft contact that he wants. And the fact that he's missing bats is really impressive. I think it's at one of the best rates he's ever had, definitely in his Cubs career. And he's not walking anyone. And I can't remember what it looks like now after his last start, but it's better than it's ever been in a Cubs uniform.
Talking our Cubs roundtable here, Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic, Tony Andracki of NBC Sports Chicago, and Evan Altman of the Cubs Insider all here in studio with me. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. The guys are going to hang out for another 20 minutes or so talking about the Cubs. Evan, I'll start with you on this one. When the Cubs had said, look, we're not giving Joe Maddon an extension, what was your reaction to it?
It felt like par for the course. I mean, we saw that with the team of executives going into the last season of their own contracts, right? They all had kind of said, we're just going to let this thing go. We don't want to worry about it during the season. With the infamous party in the bleachers that kind of concluded that season, when they all had, okay, we're done now. We're ready to go. This isn't a distraction anymore. And so it sort of felt like that. But if you look at the way Theo talked about, as I mentioned earlier in that last press conference, right, and the things that they wanted to see differently, it sounded at times as if he was speaking to Joe Maddon directly, some things that they wanted to make sure they saw. And I think, with the organization in general, and Epstein admitted a lot of his own shortcomings as well, and with the front office and what they had done. But I think this is a matter of, has Joe Maddon done enough to earn an extension? Absolutely. But is Joe Maddon right now and everything that's gone on in the last year or 2 years the same guy that we want for the next 2 to 3 years? Let's let this go a little bit, and we're comfortable with him. We just need to see a little bit more before we make that call.
Yeah, I think, he said it at the end of the year presser, and he heard things from the players that things needed to change slightly. Not drastically, not that it was a terrible atmosphere, not that people were at each other's throats. Just little tweaks, and we've talked about all those little tweaks. I think Joe's done an amazing job embracing those changes and being a coach again, not just a manager of the coaches and letting them do their things. He doesn't like to interview too much, but he's interjecting a little bit more, and it's working brilliantly. There's something about him this year that
he said it's the happiest he's been. I was surprised because obviously I host the Joe Maddon Show. And each week he keeps talking about how he's enjoyed this leading up into the season and now the season itself, where he is more involved. And I think that it has something to do with that. When Joe's kind of a CEO, that he's been a CEO type manager. And I think because his roots are so strong in like scouting and development, that him being closer to the product, if that even makes sense, seems to have made him happier.
Yeah, no doubt. You can see it when he talks to us in pre and post game. He keeps bringing it up. I don't think it's just an act. I think it matters for the players. I think it matters for him. And I think the front office appreciates it, too. They had some advice for him. They had some guidance that they would like. They don't dictate things, but they like, they had some thoughts to share, and he embraced it. And I think that's I don't know if that means he's getting an extension. I don't know, if it drastically changes their view for the future. But it definitely is a huge positive step for those things to, happen.
Yeah, I mean, he has talked about Chris Bryant going back to the videotape from 2016 and seeing what it was that KB was doing so well and wanting to get back to it. And, I don't know exactly how much Joe talked to KB and was a big help in the turnaround with Chris. I know the axe bat, obviously, as you wrote about Sahadev, was a big factor. But, in general, I think Joe is a huge reason, as we were talking, Lawrence, why did they turn around after that first road trip? I think Joe's calm, his confidence, is something that the team really needed at that moment, and that he was the exact right guy to do it. Last year, I think he did a fantastic job with all those injuries, with the way that no Darvish, no Chris Bryant, basically, then Morrow and Strope go down. I just think he did a great job maneuvering the bullpen and even getting them to the point that they did. But I also don't disagree with the fact that this is kind of it's a year of reckoning. I think it was the exact phrase that Theo used, and it is for everybody. So why not for Joe Maddon too? I mean, they can worry about extension and stuff later, but so many of these players go all the way up until free agency without an extension. Theo did it himself, as they said. So I get what they're talking about, but yeah, obviously the book's not out. We'll see what happens in October in terms of whether Joe will be here after 19.
I got three guys who cover the Cubs pretty closely. I'm so fortunate to have them here in studio. Evan Altman, Sadhav Sharma, Tony Andracki. We're going to continue our Cubs roundtable after a quick timeout. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Yu Darvish. So stick around. That's next here on The Score. I got a few more minutes with my Cubs roundtable. I'm Lauren Tomes. Evan Altman of Cubs Insider is here. Sadhav Sharma of The Athletic is here. Tony Andracki of NBC Sports Chicago is here. They all cover the Cubs, and they were nice enough to come and hang out with me in studio. Tony, what's it like to cover Yu Darvish?
Way different this year compared to last year.
How so?
Honestly, a lot has been made of it, but the interviews in English, I think, is a huge factor because there's nothing lost in translation now, and I don't know how much was actually lost in translation before, but it's just easier to interact directly with a guy always. So, you know, you ask him a direct question, and even if it's only a sentence or two, obviously English is not his first language, it's easier to know, you know, that he understood your question, and if he doesn't, he asks. So I think that makes it that, and then the sense of humor that he's had pretty much all year, like, I'm Yu Darvish, I walk people. I think those are the two things that or something that we rarely saw last year. I mean, I think I saw him smile and laugh and joke with reporters maybe one time last year, and that was with the whole A-Rod stuff that was going on. But yeah, other than that, it's really the fact that that he's speaking in English and the fact that he's joking about pretty much everything.
Would you agree, Sadhav?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. It's a completely different vibe just talking to him and dealing with him because we're actually interacting with him. There were so many times last year that he was correcting his interpreter or the interpreter would say something and we'd all kind of like look at each other like, what does he mean that? Because that's a really big deal if that's what he means. And then, you know, PR would have to come out later and then tell us, well, that's not exactly what he meant. This is what he meant. So it was a big mess. And we never got to know the guy. We had no clue, you know, what he was really thinking, how he was really feeling. Last year was a really tough year to get to know him and to work with him, frankly. And now you get to see his personality. You get to understand what he's feeling. And like Tony said, it's not like he's giving us, you know, really long, eloquent answers. And I don't expect him to. It's his second language. But he's definitely interacting with us more and we're seeing that personality. And it's just a completely different experience.
It's one of the interesting things about baseball right now is – I think that we as a media, and I mean, if you look around this room, I mean, we've probably got more diversity than most baseball media, but this is a room that doesn't have any women in it. And does anyone else speak another language? I barely speak Spanish.
Barely speak Spanish where I'm at.
And I actually think that's some place that baseball probably needs to go and media companies need to start thinking about how are we best serving our audiences if we have reporters that don't speak the same language as the players. Does that make any sense to you guys?
Yeah, I spend my mornings right now working on Duolingo. And
it's great, isn't it?
And it's bringing back my, you know, high school, college level Spanish. And, you know, it's going to take me years, but it frustrates me. And I'm like, why should I make Jose Quintana speak to me in his second language? I feel like this guy has a lot more to say if I can just speak to him in his language and kind of get him to feel more comfortable. He's very proud of the fact that he learned English. So I'm not going to, you know, say that he shouldn't be speaking to us in English. You can tell that he wants to. He's proud and he worked hard to get there. But I also feel like there's something that he, you know, he can't fully express to us sometimes. And I feel like there's a lot about pitching that he has to say. And I'm not getting all of that information from him because he's using words that he's just not completely familiar with. And that's unfair for our part, on our end. Why aren't we putting in the work to make sure that we really understand these people and know what they have to say and know how, you know, how they truly are expressing themselves?
Evan, how would you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and that's part of what you guys were talking about with Darvish, and I think we see that there's a comfort level that's there if you're able and think back to, and now he's on the south side of town, but you know, part of the reason they wanted to bring Ricky Renteria into Chicago in the first part was he was able to converse with the Latin players that were coming up and those young guys. So you're talking about coming from a different country, coming through here, being in the majors, totally different life experience. Well, how can we do things to make you more comfortable as an athlete, right? The Cubs have talked about onboarding pitchers and having some problems with that in the past. How do you set things up? That's a big part of their free agency pitch. You know, finding the right OBGYN for a player's wife when she's pregnant, that sort of thing. It's all a part of this big mix. And if the media can kind of reflect that a little bit better about what that what the demographics are of the team, that's going to get those better answers that Darvish is able to give now, right? Because they're more at ease, not just with their surroundings, but with those members of the media. And you're going to get those nice little insights that otherwise you wouldn't get from a one or two sentence little snippet that he's just answering the only way he can.
Added bonus of having Joe Maddon, too, because he's a Spanish speaker to a certain degree. It's interesting because the demographics of the game do keep changing, and we do see more more foreign-born players coming in and playing, and I wonder how that will change us. I don't know if that's something that we can figure out in the next 5 minutes, but it is something that I think about it when I think about media in the macro. Let me ask you guys this. Saadov, you wrote about it a little bit today, so I know where you stand on this, but let me ask Tony. Tony, where is the biggest weakness for the Cubs at right now, and how can they bolster it?
I mean, I actually didn't see what Saadov wrote, but I imagine it's about the bullpen. And that's exactly where their weakness is. I mean, I actually think this offense, and I know, Saadov, you talked about it yesterday with Joe, the fact that hitting with runners in scoring position is a big issue. And everybody's concerned because that's last year. That was the main thing, that and the lack of power for the second half. But I'm not very concerned about this position player group. I think it's the bullpen. And I know that everybody freaks out every time they blow a lead. But, I mean, Carl Edwards Jr. hasn't looked right since, like, the first week of August last year. They really need to get him back. Obviously, Strope and Brandon Morrow aren't healthy. And even that, you know, going into that, even if all those guys were healthy, do the Cubs have enough? I don't know. I mean, I still think Kyle Ryan can be a good lefty. But really, since he froze in that one moment against the Marlins, he's struggled. I think he's given up runs in half his outings since then. So they really need to bolster. They need to get, you know, Montgomery has always been better as a starter compared to his time as a reliever or short outing guy. I just think there's way too many question marks in the bullpen right now. And if they want to go deep into October, they need to get possibly two guys back there.
What scares you so much, Saadov?
Yeah, they came into this season knowing that the bullpen needed more additions. They didn't have the funds to go out and be aggressive and get the type of guys that they wanted to get. You know, you can put that on ownership being strict with the budget, or put that on Theo for not, you know, allocating funds properly over the years. Either way, they knew it was an issue and they came into the season. We all talked about it all winter long, and here it is, an issue. What they needed to happen was for Brandon Moore to come back on May 1st-ish, or for Carl Edwards to turn into what he's always tantalized us with as a dominant reliever. Neither of those things have happened. If anything, Edwards has taken I don't even see the stuff that he used to have. He's not missing bats. Both his curveball and four seam are at the worst swing and miss percentage of his career, outside of even maybe that 5-game stint he had in 2015, which really doesn't count. I mean, he does not look confident. He does not have the stuff. You can't go further assuming that he's going to be an impact reliever. You can't assume that Brandon Moore is going to come back and be effective. So you're down two guys who you really needed one of those two, if not both of them, to be impact relievers by this point, to feel confident that, okay, maybe we don't have to be too crazy at the deadline and be really aggressive. There's no doubt that Theo knows what the weakness is, and he knows, look at how good this team is. They're 10 games above 500. They're in first place. They're playing pretty well, even with the bullpen and the hitting with runners and scoring position issues. And that's just been like 2 weeks with the hitting with runners. I agree with Tony that that's going to turn. I trust this offense to be better about it. Theo has to go out and get an impact reliever. He can't go out and supplement it and get more Kyle Ryan types. And, hey, those guys are great. props to the pro scouting department for finding hidden gems like that and helping them and player development and the coaching staff to, you know, kind of turn these guys around. A guy like Brandon Kinsler was really struggling last year and they fixed some things. Kyle Ryan was terrible with the Tigers at the end of his stint there and he fixed some things. That's great. But they're not impact bat missing relievers that you can count on, especially look how bullpens are looked in October. They don't have that bullpen right now and they're going to need it.
Evan, I see you nodding your head with some of the stuff that Sahadev is saying.
Yeah, I mean, that's the issue. Is it, just look at last night, right? Like, and it's funny, you know, Brandon Kinsler kind of threw some shade at the Nats and then kind of hasn't had the best luck since then. But that's the problem is they're reliant to an extent on luck because they have a bunch of guys who have to have the contact be weak and at defenders. They don't have guys, as Sahadev just said, that miss bats, right? Brandon Morrow misses bats. Well, he's hurt. Pedro Strop misses bats. He's hurt. Dylan Maples misses bats. He can't find the strike zone.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just this mix, and the game is not such anymore. The game of baseball has evolved. It's velocity, and it's getting strikeouts. If you just have a bunch of guys out there that, you know, a dribbler can get through. I mean, we've seen that a couple times. All it takes is a little blooper when you've walked a couple guys, which this bullpen continues to do, and then you're kind of at the mercy of the batting average on balls in play, right? The BABIP gods will determine your fate unless you go ahead and slay them with a couple of those high leverage, high-end type relievers that can throw strikes and miss bats doing it.
All right, since you guys are nice enough to come in here, because we've run out of time. I could talk to you guys for 4 hours, honestly. But since you guys were nice enough to come here, I would like to take the power of the radio show and allow for you all to explain why people should read your Cubs coverage. Evan, I start with you. Wu-Tang!
Yes. You know, we've always been Cubs insiders, kind of growing a little bit, but from the time we started it, just an independent little spot that you know, there's a lot of personality in it, I think. So if you want the stats, we're going to give you that. But we don't have the same kind of upfront direct coverage as the other guys do. But there's a lot of opinionated stuff in there. And I think we try to take a little bit of a different angle. And again, at least with mine, and I think a lot of the other guys that write for us, you're going to know who I am based on what I write. And so for some of you, you might not like that much. Maybe that's not a good thing. But otherwise, you're going to get to know me. And I kind of try to take people along the journey with me as we go.
Sahadev?
I think at The Athletic, Patrick and I do a great job of really covering this team from all ends. The combination of us talking to scouts, front office members within the organization, outside of the organization, and agents really gets us every bit of news. And I think we can take the analytical approach and mix it with the scouting approach and really distill what's going on with this team. I'd say you'd be hard pressed to find it covered as thoroughly as the way Patrick and I do it. And really we have the time and we put in the effort to not just, you know, spit out 400 word pieces or just here's a quick transaction note. It's in-depth stuff that's going to give you as much information as possible.
I really enjoyed Patrick's piece on Marquee today, which at some point later on this week in a pod or on the show, I want to discuss more thoroughly. Tony?
Yeah, I mean, everything these guys said, you know, obviously I worked under Mooney for so long, so I love reading his stuff as well. At NBC, the thing that I like the most is just that we have a little bit of everything. So there's video, there's, you know, fun stuff, there's some in-depth, some analysis, podcasts, everything. So I feel like to cover the Cubs, it, you know, it's visual, it's audio and everything else. I know Sahadev just started a podcast as well. So I think that's the way to go about it. That's the best way for NBC. So I think that's our hook, is drawing everybody in visually, audio, and then reading it online.
Gentlemen, I really appreciate you dropping by the studio, and hopefully we can do this again. Tony gave you a round of applause. Well, it was like kind of a light round of applause, but you all do a tremendous job. I follow all of you on Twitter, and it's great for me to be able to get your insight on what's going on with the Cubs. So thank you so much for dropping in. I appreciate it. Evan Altman, Sahadev Sharma, and Tony Andracki, they do a great job, and I'm so glad they were here. We need to take a break. For those of you craving Bears OTA news, because I dared talk about Aaron Rodgers. What about the Bears OTAs? I got a Bears OTA story for you. I'll share it with you next here on The Score. So there's a little bit of Bears news, but keep in mind it's May. James Daniels is going to be the center with Cody Whitehair moving to guard. That's not the most interesting thing happening at Bears OTAs. Tony, I don't know if you saw this, But yesterday or Monday at OTA's organized team activity, Matt Nagy decided that it was going to be Monday fun day. So we know how imposing athletes are, how much they, especially football players, don't look like human beings compared to the rest of us. I'm going to name off these events, and I want you to, with the bell, let me know which one of these events that the Bears had for their Monday fun day you think you could compete with an NFL player on, okay? All right. They had 10 events. First one, hitting the crossbar with a pass from 15 yards away. Nope. Okay. I feel like I could compete in that one. That's one I feel like I could do. Putting a golf ball into a bucket. Could you compete? Okay. 50 push-ups as fast as you can. Nope. That's no good. This one doesn't count because it was the coaches. The coaches had to run sprints the width of the field. Think you keep up with Mike Furry? I don't. Juggling tennis balls for 10 seconds. No? I could do that, I think.
Like two?
Yeah, that's all they did. They did two. Two tennis balls for 10 seconds.
Fine. Okay.
Throwing a pass through the goalpost at 55 yards. No. I could probably throw it 55 yards, but not with it ending up through the goalpost. There's no way in hell. Balancing a bat on your hand and walking the width of the field. Campy, you were in marching band. This is like right up your alley.
Yep. And I have a huge palm.
For the win! Shooting volleyballs into a garbage can. Tony, this is all you.
Yeah, this is my thing. Yep.
Now, were you a volume shooter or were you efficient?
He's efficient.
Yeah, I'm leaning more efficiency. Yeah.
His coach didn't let him shoot all that much. Eating six crackers at the same time.
Please.
I know. I mean. All right. Can't be sitting on that one. Knocking a cone off of a pad from 15 yards away. Count me in for that one. I'm in on that one. Tony, you're out on that one?
Yeah, I think I'm out on that one.
I think that's kind of fun. And they played dodgeball. They had an obstacle course and they had pizza for lunch.
I'm in on that part.
I'm in on all this stuff. Monday fun day for the Bears at OTA. All right, I got one more thing, a White Sox thing for you. Kind of an old school White Sox thing. It made me laugh. First of all, that baseball night in Chicago show that Leila Rahimi does with Ozzie Guillen and Doug Glanville and David DeJesus and Bill Melton is fantastic. Ozzie is a trip. And if you would like the definitive word on the Adam Eaton Todd Frazier beef that goes all the way back to 2016 with the White Sox, I'm going to let Ozzie Guillen tell you exactly what the deal is.
We all know that infamously, Frazier moved his locker. They used to be next to each other. Hmm. And that was 3 years ago. So at some point, Frazier's locker stays. Eaton's locker moves down the
way. Well, I can say one thing about it. Eaton, nobody liked you in a White Sox uniform in the clubhouse. Okay? That's what
That's
I
real.
Know.
That's being real.
I just being honest.
That is some real talk right there.
My favorite part of that is the co-sign by David DeJesus. One more time, Tony. Load it up. Because you could tell, like, David wanted to say something, but he didn't want to go too hard. And then Ozzie was like, don't worry. I'll go hard enough for all three of us.
We all know that, infamously, Frazier moved his locker. They used to be next to each other. And that was 3 years ago. So at some point, Frazier's locker stays. Eaton's locker moves down the
way. I can say one thing about it. Eaton, nobody liked you in a White Sox uniform in the clubhouse. Okay? That's what I mean.
That's being real.
I just being honest.
That is some real talk right there.
You damn right it's some real talk, Leila Rahimi.
Nobody liked you. Okay?
Wait, I know we got a break. Please, Tony, can I hear the whole thing one more time? Because Ozzie is out here spitting truth.
We all know that, infamously, Frazier moved his locker. They used to be next to each other. Hmm. And that was 3 years ago. So at some point, Frazier's locker stays. Eaton's locker moves down the
way.
Well,
I can say one thing about it. Eaton, nobody like you in a White Sox uniform in the clubhouse. Okay? That's what
I know. That's being real.
I'm just being honest.
That is some real talk right there.
That's so great. We'll take a break. Talk with McNeil and Parkins next here on The Score.
Eaton, nobody like you in a White Sox uniform in the clubhouse.
God, that made me so happy yesterday. As you're trying to explain to people that just because Adam Eaton he's a gadfly to a camera or a microphone didn't make him a good guy. And he was not well liked inside that clubhouse. And he thought that Drake LaRoche was one of their leaders. I was so happy to see Ozzie just go scorched earth on him.
Tony Montana.
That guy up there,
I never like him.
Full Ozzie yesterday, and it was great. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Chicago Wolves. Chicago Wolves and San Diego are tied at one game apiece in the Western Conference Finals. The Wolves return home Monday for Game 6 at Allstate Arena. Tickets start at just $15. For playoff and ticket information, visit chicagowolves.com. McNeil and Parkins. No Parkins. He is still traveling. Shep is in, and the boys are going to have Theo Epstein coming up in 5 minutes here on The Score.
Yes, indeed. The boss is supposed to join us in just a few minutes. He is always engaging and lots of good things to talk about. And it's been a while since things have been pretty much quiet on the Western Front when we've had him on board. That was an exciting game, and it's yet another big series. One of the things that I want to talk to him about right out of the gate is how weird it is to be here at the tail end of May. And this already feels like a fifth or sixth big series of the year. To me, anyway, it does.
Well, and it's going to keep going that way, too, because if the NL Central is going to be as competitive as it appears right now, series with the Cardinals and series with the Brewers are only going to get bigger and bigger as the summer goes on. You're going to be playing each of them another 15, 12 times each.
I felt the way you did, Lawrence, about Zach's call. He hammered that thing home. I heard it. You played it back to back, probably the fifth and sixth times I've heard it today already, and I can't get enough of it. He crushed that one.
I loved it because he's so in it in the moment, and then you can hear him go, "Oh wait, I got stuff for this," and then he gives you all the stuff that he has for it too. It was genuine, and he is really fit in with that crew. That's not an easy thing. You know, he's asked to do one inning a game. It's not easy when you have a legend like Pat Hughes to not be intimidated on not being you. And Zach is still him when he does the inning that he does. And the last 2 days, well, today and yesterday, he'll be doing the play-by-play for the Cubs, which is amazing.
Magnifico! Magnifico, Zach! He's sitting in Hawks' catbird seat. Pat's not going to do this forever.
Hey.
Zach might be Mike North's heir apparent. That's my favorite. I thought Alonzo Spellman was supposed to be Richard Dent's heir apparent.
Well,
that's a different apparent.
If you're talking about the jockeying of positions for the holy grail jobs in our industry, Cubs play-by-play, pretty high on the list.
Yeah, that was the first job I ever wanted.
Yeah, sure.
There was no sports talk radio when I figured out I wanted to do this. I was 9 at the time or be a sports writer, but I would turn the sound down on the television and talk into a recorder, play-by-play.
God, and it never becomes open. I mean, it's not just like, oh, yeah, it's the whatever. It's a job that Pat Hughes has been here, what,
24
years it is
now? Yes, 24.
My goodness, it's the only voice I really know. Like, listening to baseball on the radio growing up, it's the only voice I know behind Cubs baseball with any regularity.
You're right.
Did you guys see the picture a couple days ago? I think Zach tweeted it out of Pat in a snakeskin jacket.
Yes. From the Ted Nugent Outlet Store.
So great.
Magnifico.
You need Pat to describe it himself, though.
Oh, you do. That's
the full description.
Yeah, you got to get the full like uniform description from Pat Hughes on his snakeskin jacket.
Scales beautifully, uniformly aligned along
solid
with the vertebrae.
Black, snakeskin down the back.
Mirrors a little bit.
So we'll have a lot of Cubs love, obviously, today. And as Lawrence mentioned, if you just didn't hear it, you're just jumping in. Theo Epstein in a few minutes. We also are going to do the safety dance in the 4 o'clock hour. We're going to talk to two of the top 100 Bears in franchise history, one from yesteryear and one from these Bears. Eddie Jackson is going to join us at around 4:30 today, shortly after we visit with Doug Plank, number 46.
Nice.
Yes.
Eddie might very quickly eclipse the Bears defensive touchdown record. Might do that quickly.
Is
he at five or six?
I think he's at six.
Yeah, I think it's six.
And the record's
right?
Nine?
Yeah, he's knocking on the door already. Just needs to play the Panthers again. Didn't he have two a couple seasons ago against Cam Newton? A fumble return and the pick return?
Was it the pick six against Detroit that got us the singing?
Yeah,
that was two against the Panthers. Day. Right. He had two touchdowns, which is half of how many completions Mitch Trubisky had that day in
that's
a Bears win when he went 4 out of 7.
Yeah, that's right.
In a game that set offensive football back 50 years.
Well, but hey, a win's a win. That's what's important.
This list, not as bad as Ty Collins.
This list has got me jumping again today. I don't know how much time we'll spend on it. It's not critical. There's big things happening in the world all over the place, you know, things that are worth getting your undies in a bunch over, but it looks like William Perry is going to wind up in the top 25 in Bears franchise history. And there's anytime you put together a list, you're going to have debate, and it's fun, and nobody gets hurt along the way. But that's an insult to a lot of guys who I've seen at between 26 and 100, and probably some who aren't even in the top 100, who were more skilled football players and more important to the Bears than William Perry was from a football standpoint.
I agree with you. I wish I had more time to discuss it with you, but you've got the Cubs president coming up, so I'm going to get out of your way.
All right, Lawrence, you have a good afternoon, bud. Lawrence Holmes, and again, great stuff yesterday with Joe Maddon. Our audience that didn't get a chance to hear it heard it at 5 o'clock yesterday, and it was a big mover. Everybody enjoyed it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.